Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. In a cavernous stadium in Glendale, Arizona, the U.S. beat Panama 3-0 in an often pleasing game of soccer to open the Berhalter era. It's shortly after the game on Sunday, and Greg and I are here to talk about it. Greg, how are you?
Adam, Tyler Adams is dominating the Bundesliga, and Greg Berhalter is dominating CONCACAF. Our long national nightmare is over.
Indeed. Only the most hateful of haters can come away from tonight, today, unencouraged, I would say. Let's start by talking about the lineup. Zach Steffen in goal, Nick Lima and Daniel Lovitz at fullback. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right.
It says everything that you have to very carefully say the names of the fullbacks. I think that's how sort of unexpected the fullback selections were.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I sort of expected Lima to maybe play on the left, but Walker Zimmerman and Aaron Long were the center backs. No big surprise there. Christian Roldan and Mihailovic were the eights, with Michael Bradley sitting behind them as the six. And then we had a front three from right to left of Corey Baird, Jazzy Zardes up top, and Jeremy Obobese on the left wing. What were you surprised by with the lineup? Anything?
I mean, I kind of have some big takeaways from the lineup, and they're kind of bigger than just this roster.
Well, before we get to that, let's just give like the conventional surprises, right?
All right.
Reggie Cannon being left off the 11 surprised me. I'm sure it surprised most people.
Right, because we all kind of have Reggie Cannon in our minds as either the backup or like right in line, like just barely behind DeAndre Yedlin as our backup right back.
Right, not even in the 11. And I think another one, maybe a slightly lesser surprise, but still a surprise, Paul Arriola not starting on the wing, a guy who played in a lot of World Cup qualifiers in 2017.
And played well, like the guy played well in those qualifiers. So, yeah, I think those would definitely be the two surprises. I think there were a lot of people who were surprised that Will Trapp was not in the lineup because they thought that he was going to be sort of Berhalter's guy. I don't think you and I were in that camp.
We weren't. I thought it was going to be Bradley. I guess we talked about this last week. So some conspiracy theories met their end tonight, hopefully.
Yeah, anyone who's worried that Berhalter was going to be starting Will Trapp for the next 4 years sort of probably aren't that happy that it could now be the case that Michael Bradley is in that spot. But they definitely had the Will Trapp conspiracies end.
And I guess the last surprise would be Mihailovic getting the nod in the midfield. I mean, all the word out of camp was that he was impressing. So by the time the lineup was announced today, I guess it wasn't that big of a surprise, but if you had told me a month ago that he would be the starting number 10, I would have been surprised. So on some level, that's a surprise still.
Yeah, definitely. With guys like Sebastian Legette, like you have to say that there were more established players, more established MLSers available who were leapfrogged. Again, if this is sort of lineup is an accurate reflection of Berhalter's current depth chart, Legette getting leapfrogged, Marky Delgado, Kellen Acosta. That's a pretty big deal for young Mihailovic.
And Mihailovic played well tonight, so that's cool. But I interrupted you. You had some larger interpretations of tonight's lineup that you were about to jump into, and I want to open the door for that now.
All right. Well, it goes all the way to Kellen Acosta getting dropped, and then you see this lineup come out where Reggie Cannon's not in the mix. And I think, again, if this is a picture of Berhalter's depth chart at the moment, even if it's at the moment, he's basically ripped up all the spreadsheets we've been putting together for the past eight, nine months. And I bet everyone who's watching, everybody in the pool who's watching would have picked up on this too. Berhalter doesn't seem to care about your overall FIFA rating. It doesn't matter that Reggie Cannon is probably overall a better right back than Nick Lima. If Nick Lima has certain qualities in certain areas that fit Berhalter's game plan for the night or in general, Nick Lima gets the start instead. So That's the message that's sent as soon as Kellen Acosta is cut from a January camp of sort of BC team players. And I think everyone has to sort of be wondering where they stand. Does DeAndre Yedlin get the start then in the setup that we saw tonight against Panama?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say Lima was amazing, but he did a lot of things that I think would make Yedlin uncomfortable. And I would like to talk more about that later in the episode, like what the fullbacks were doing, because I think that was a big part of the story.
It's going to make it really difficult to project out, the things we like to do to project out those call-ups for March and then for June because you can't just say, well, Yedlin's the better player, so he's going to play. You have to say, we don't know how Berhalter's going to try to play, but we know that whatever he's decided on, those are the players he's going to call up, the ones who fit best in that system and sort of push that system ahead rather than just saying, here's my best available right back, so that's who I'm going to put on the field.
Yeah, and before we get into the more about the game, it made me think, even though I know a lot of people were high on Nick Lima and I appreciated his performance too, it made me think, well, what if Sergiño Dest was in that role? Or and while Mihailović is getting a lot of praise, I couldn't help but think, what if Alex Mendez was in that role? So hopefully, and I say hopefully because I love the Youngs, that refusal to adhere to FIFA ratings from Berhalter goes pretty deep.
It sure seems like he's not going to pick anyone based on reputation. So I really hope that we get kind of that era. I want that to be the culture that we go into.
Yeah, it's really surprising and kind of refreshing. Let's talk about the way we played, and I'm going to turn it over to you almost completely here.
Well, this is from the one viewing. We haven't really gone back and watched the tape over and over again. But defensively, it's sort of pretty clear that we were set up in that 4-4-2. I think Berhalter might refer to it as a 4-2-2-2, in what I'd call sort of a middle block. And you jump in at any point if you're like, well, I kind of noticed this wrinkle because there would be little wrinkles at times, but. It was Zardes up top, and he's sort of his symmetrical partner in the 4-4-2 would have been Jordi. Their job was to deny vertical passes from Panama center backs, and then to quickly move with the ball when it shifted left and right. If that makes sense. Uh,
It
the
does make sense.
wingers, the wingers kind of get interesting because they often played a lot higher than what you'd expect in like a really low pressure 4-4-2. Even on the weak side. So at times you're like, oh, this is kind of that 4-2-4. And I think that's why Berhalter would say it's a 4-2-2-2, because sometimes those wingers are high depending on, pressing cues and triggers. And sometimes they'd be sitting back a little bit lower. They're always going to drop with the ball. So if they're high, it's because Panama's working the ball around their back four. They're never just staying high as Panama penetrates us. But what you get is, as Panama's working the ball around the back under light pressure, the passes that become available as our wingers sit a little higher, almost on the lines with Zardes, is they could try to, if Panama had the quality to do it, they could essentially try to be floating balls over our two center mids to like a weak side winger, and put a little bit more stress on our weak side defense. Panama never had the quality to do that. So we never really had to defend against that. And frankly, again, there was the one chance that Stefan made an outstanding save on after a couple of deflections that led to a shot. Panama never broke us down. Did it seem like Panama ever actually carved up our defensive block?
There were a couple times where they got space at the top of the box. And then, like you said, there was that chance where there was a deflected shot that fell to somebody on the back post. But no, yeah. I mean, other than, and I saw Berhalter's press conference after the game. He said he was a little concerned with the shots that they got off from the top of the box. I think there were two or three, and he wanted to go back and look at those. But
Yeah.
I'm making a very sh making a very short answer long. The answer is no, I don't think they broke us down.
No, and I'd want to go back too because there were some moments of transition. It was almost like after a one Panama attack, we would break into some space, and it almost like we would get a little overexcited in our transition forward, And if it broke down, and it often did because we were a little rusty and that showed at times in our execution. It was in those sort of counter transitions where I thought we might have been a little exposed, but I don't know exactly how exposed our numbers were. That would probably take a rewatch. But anyway, primarily the defense, if you were watching through it, the defense we were mostly setting up in like a 4-4-2.
All right, well, how about you talk about how we attacked? That was the part of the game. I mean, obviously, defensive stability is important, but the part of the game that I think was encouraging to me and probably to a lot of people out there was the fact that we looked like we knew how to move the ball around.
Completely. So defensively, everyone kind of, I think, expected that from Berhalter. That's sort of what he's known for, is having a 4-2-3-1 that defends in a 4-4-2. What was cool about the attack was it was absolutely nothing close to a 4-2-3-1. It was a really sort of unique setup that I don't think anybody saw coming. Raise your hand bells if you saw this tactical setup on the horizon.
Well, I'll jump in and say I think Paul Tenorio did see it coming. He talked about this on Total Soccer Show, how it would end up looking like a 3-4-3 a lot of times. But that's the only place where I heard about it. So,
All right.
right.
Well, good on him for seeing it. It absolutely turned into a 3-4-3 with Nick Lima, the right back, stepping up and in, our left back staying home and turning into a left center back. And so we'd end up with three center backs, and then we'd have Bradley and Lima as like two holding midfielders, and then Georgie and Nick Roldan as two advanced midfielders, and Berhalter referred to them as tens. Bobasi and Baird wide with Zardes as a striker. So it's like a 3-4-3 with a box four center midfielders. And it's a really like different shape
Wait.
than I think we've really ever seen the US play before.
So it's almost like a 3-2-2-3, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So however you want to break those zones down, Bradley and Lima sit in front of the defenders, and then Georgie and am I saying his name right?
Georgie, I think is what it is.
All right. Well, it's the year of Georgie. So Georgie and Roldan sitting ahead of ahead of Bradley and Lima and underneath Zardes, with a lot of freedom to get into pockets and soft spots in the defense and try to collect the ball at their feet.
Did it seem to you that it was mostly Lima who was stepping forward in that spot? Because Lovitz, Lovitz, he did it some, but not a lot. Not as much as Lima, right?
I'd say it was almost entirely Lima. And I don't know for sure. This will be a rewatch if it just depended on what side the ball was on, but I don't think so. I think Bradley shifted out to the left side. Lima came in with him and played as like a right central midfielder in a holding capacity. And then we had three center backs behind those guys underneath them.
And yet Lima had quite a bit of freedom to get forward, which he did on several occasions.
Oh yeah, Lima or Bradley would be able to get forward, because even if we lose it and there's a transition, we've got one of them still, Bradley or Lima, sitting in front of three center backs, which is all you need to defend over short time spans until everyone else can make it back in the transition.
Okay.
So in that way, Berhalter again sets you up so that you're not exposed when your attack fails. Most attacks fail, as you well know.
9 out of 10, at least.
So anyway, yeah, so that was the attack. I mean, sort of the X's and O's of it. But again, the really cool thing was that we were able to, it was a bit halting, I'd say, at first, and really kind of, I
Yeah.
think the guys were really timid and reluctant, but we definitely grew into it. Everyone just looked really comfortable and the ball kind of would flow. Was that your takeaway watching it? I mean, I was kind of paying attention to all these positional sort of wrinkles, but what was your overall sense of us as a team being able to attack?
I just thought while the quality wasn't there in the final third, people were repeatedly in spots with teammates moving around them with the opportunity to create. I could imagine somewhat better players from Europe in those same spots being able to do a lot more. There was a sense of order to it, but also just opportunity when somebody got the ball at their feet, you know?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's why going into it, I was almost grading the game more on the system rather than individuals. And in that sense, I think the system passed us flying colors, because how many times did Corey Baird pick the ball up in some space on the wing, where I'm watching it saying, if that's Christian Pulisic, what a nightmare for anybody we're playing against. And it would be anybody. I mean, if we could get Christian Pulisic in that kind of space against any team in the world, they're going to have a hard time dealing with him.
Yeah, I'd have to look at the pass map or the activity map, but it sure seemed like Corey Baird was getting on the ball in the attacking third with one guy to beat all the time. Seemed like it was happening a lot. It's happening for
Right.
Ebobese and Jonathan Lewis too.
Right. And we saw that, what I saw at least on the individual level, and we'll I'm sure break down some individuals. Baird had a rough time beating that player, even with just a cross. Like, he kept hitting crosses directly into people's bodies.
Yeah, he couldn't get around him.
Ebobese had one or two decent balls in, or attempts to beat people one on one. Jonathan Lewis, in very short time, did somebody bad to set up a goal. So, but yeah, the point is, we are getting those guys into 1v1 situations, and a lot of that is the structure of those four midfielders in your box. So a lot of credit goes to Georgie and Roldan for getting into the spaces, being brave to receive the ball, because they are small windows, and then being able to find some kind of a decent pass out of it.
We should put in the standard disclaimer here. This was a Panama B team, best we can tell. They didn't look terrible to me, but they weren't that good.
They weren't traffic cones. Like, they sat, if you were kind of wondering what we were up against, they sat in a pretty low block 4-4-2, and just tried to make it. I mean, they just tried to stay compact and organized, and I thought they did a decent job of that too. And in the first 20 minutes, that really showed, because Roldan and Georgie weren't getting the ball that much, because the windows into them were really tight, and I think our guys were a little timid and didn't want to make mistakes, so they weren't brave enough to hit it into their feet. The other thing I'll say about the way we're playing attacking wise is, it might not have looked like it, maybe it did. Gyasi Zardes is a huge limitation in this system,
Yeah.
and not just for the chances that sort of went begging off of his forehead. With Roldan and Georgie occupying so much attention from the holding mids of Panama, or the center mids of Panama, and even a little bit of the center backs, because of their roles as sort of their free roles to run past Zardes, big windows can open up into Zardes's feet, and we can't play those balls into Zardes's feet, because he cannot hold the ball up for us.
Yeah, he's not good with the ball at his feet. He had a couple layoffs at the top of
Yeah,
the
but
box that were encouraging.
he tried his level best, didn't he? But he's not. I mean, he's not that guy. Again, you watch that and you're thinking to yourself, if this were Josh Sargent, he'd have a field day, and the guys around him would have a field day.
Yeah.
In fact, like, again, I'm watching for what was missing as much as what was there. Roldan and Georgie would have been in so much more dangerous. Next, if they had a guy like Josh Sargent or Jozy Altidore, frankly, if Jozy Altidore were in that doing that job, and we could play off of him, the combination opportunities for Georgie and Roldan would have increased dramatically.
Yeah. The imagination, Greg. The imagination. Should we run through the goals real quick?
Yeah, let's do the goals. We got to talk about the goals, right?
Yes. So, Georgi Mihailovic got the opener in the 40th minute. Here's how it happened. A long looping ball from one of the Panamanian center backs, knotted down by Aaron Long to Bradley. Bradley played a somewhat loose pass to Roldan. In fact, it was one of only two passes from Bradley that were not completed tonight.
All right.
This is a somewhat loose pass to Roldan. Roldan gets tackled before he can get to it, and it pops up right into the path of Nick Lima, who is running forward, plays a what I thought was quite a clever disguised pass to Zardes in the channel.
Yeah, Because that it sure looked like Lima. His body was telling you he was going to play it out wide to Baird, right?
Right.
Yeah,
But no, he
that's good
didn't.
stuff.
He didn't. Played it right to Zardes. Zardes kind of got ragdolled, and maybe he meant to, maybe he didn't. I guess we'll never know. Pop it out wide to Baird, and then Baird, this was like the moment of class from the first half. Baird just picks out a sharp first time pass to Mihailovic, who's arriving in the box. Mihailovic hits it first time, and it's deflected. Wrong foot's the keeper, goes in. Not a world class finish or anything, but the pass was pretty nice, I thought.
Pass was good, and Georgie hit it, struck it really well, low to the ground. I mean, so many times you see that hit first time skied over. So the fact that he hit it really well and 4 inches off the ground goes a long way towards giving yourself a chance to score at least. So credit to Georgie, and also say Georgie's was making excellent contact with the ball all game. Like we were firing the ball into his feet in tough spaces. And he was routinely like pinging one touch passes, even like 20, 50, 20, 25 yard passes out of those spaces accurately. So the fact that he was able to take this cutback that was hit pretty sharply and put it on frame is full credit to him.
Yeah. I'm not sure he hit it well or if it was going to go on frame, but probably.
I think it was. I think it was struck really well, and it was on frame. It could have been saved. It was off to the. It would have been to the keeper's right, and
The keeper
very
was
easily could have
diving
been
right.
a
Yeah.
save. Yeah, but he again he I think he did make solid make like hit it well and 4 inches off the ground. So.
Yeah. I'm not going to dog him too much. I thought he played really well. A lot of people are saying that. Some people are calling him the man of the match. What I liked about Mihailovic, this goal aside, was how quickly he decided to do stuff, and how comfortable he was on the ball. You'll probably say that's because of the system, and I don't disagree with that. But his passing decisions were fast, and he looked like he was very comfortable receiving the ball in those little pockets of space.
Oh yeah. No, I'm the system is what gave him the freedom to find those pockets. He and Roldan still had to actually do the job to find them. And his I thought Georgie's technique was excellent throughout the entire game.
Okay, goal number two came much later in the 80th minute. This was on a U.S. corner kick that was collected outside, cleared, knotted down by somebody from Panama, collected by Christian Roldan. Roldan was tackled, and a counterattack was on, except that Nick Lima came sliding in to stop the counter, tackled the ball back, took a touch or two, and then just hit a rope at the penalty marker, where Walker Zimmerman rose to head it in.
Yeah, a little bit of great luck that the best header in the camp hadn't had time to get back to play defense yet. And
Right.
once Lima won it, Zimmerman made the excellent choice to get himself back in the box. And then my favorite part of it was his absolute mean mug once he scored the goal.
Yeah.
Did you catch that part?
Yeah, I did. And
I've
he.
got time for a Walker Zimmerman mean mug. In a January friendly.
The third goal came in the 89th minute. Christian Ramirez had come on for Zardes, and it's the move started with a poor pass from Will Trapp that was intercepted, but it kind of bounced back to him, and then he one-touched it to Lewis on the wing, Jonathan Lewis. Lewis took his man on, got to the end line, and squared it to Ramirez for a nice tap-in. I couldn't help but notice the cleverness of Ramirez's movement. As soon as he saw that ball go out to Lewis, he jumped behind the center back, and then the camera kind of zoomed in on Lewis, so you couldn't see what Ramirez was doing, at least in the broadcast that I watched. But then, as the play developed, Ramirez is just standing there by himself at the six, and he tapped it in.
So the camera pans out and you're watching it and you're going, of course, that's where Ramirez is.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I would have liked to see how he got from A to B, but I did see as soon as the ball went to Lewis, he stepped behind the center back, so he couldn't see him. I mean, I know that's elementary stuff for a national team striker, but still nice to see.
Well, yeah, that was a happy one for everyone in Minnesota, I think, Bells.
Yeah, good to see Christian get a cap and get an international goal. Not sure he'll be back again, but. Who knows? Nobody knows anymore. It's a totally new era.
I
It's a
know.
depth
So,
chart.
and I know we have to go goal by goal and talk about them because those are key moments in any match. But the other really important thing for me is those weren't our only three chances. We have, you know what I mean? Like when you're looking through your notes of the game, Bells, there are other chances that we had where goals seemed likely, and that's a big deal for U.S. national team. So three goals plus a few other chances. Solid attacking out like output.
Yeah, totally. I mean, just off the top of my head, Zardes had the two headers, very clear looks at goal with his head in the first half. Should have put one of them away. Probably should have put both of them away. And then Zardes had another chance late after Sebastian Lletget came on. He
Yeah, a
you
double
remember?
chance, right? He smashed it into the keeper and then smashed his the rebound well over.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
That is the one I was talking about. After that sort of rambling run from Lletget from midfield. And I couldn't help but think Zardes probably should have cut it back across to the penalty marker both of the times he shot. You know,
Sure. But what you're
it's
really
boring to
what
pick on Zardes.
I know. I was gonna say what you're really thinking is Zardes should have been not in the game and Ramirez should have been in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quibbling by arguing for that. I think what Berhalter said after the game was, you know, he put in a lot of work. We hit the ball. Play the ball to him with two defenders on him a lot of the time, and he just kept working away. So 3G was pleased with the work rate from Jazzy.
No one's ever doubted Jazzy's work rate.
That's true.
Should we go through the sort of list of guys who played and some of them talk about more than others?
Sure. I mean, do you have any thoughts on Stefan? I mean, he had that one save. Tell me about that save.
That's a badass save because he's set up to stop the shot from the center channel. It gets deflected out to a guy who has no defenders between him and the goal, so there's no help. And the def I don't know remember which center back was on that side. But he was not going to be able to get there either. So you know you've got the entire goal to cover. He went with a wide base, which is good because I don't think he should have gotten like into a small crouch and timed his sort of a bounce right so that he's hitting the balls of his feet right as the striker striking the ball, gives himself a chance to make an athletic save and then made one hell of an athletic reaction save.
Yeah, okay. That was really the only serious action he was called into. He dealt with it well,
We
but
also he also played with his feet a little bit, so we actually had some real cool. Again, this is stuff is as important to me as some of the chances closer towards Panama's goal. But we rondoed our way out of some light pressure from Panama with Stefan like hitting a finesse pass, splitting two defenders into Michael Bradley, who had somebody on his back, who then hit a ball out to one of the fullbacks. So he did do the things that Greg Berhalter is going to demand of his goalkeepers, which is play the ball with your feet so that we don't just have to lump it forward.
yeah, I actually have the game on mute, the replay on mute right now, and I was just watching an instance of that. Stefan plays it to, I think it's Long, or maybe it was Roldan coming back towards the goal, and then we just played little triangles all the way up the left wing, under light pressure. Light pressure. This isn't a Jurgen Klopp gegenpress or anything.
No, but the windows aren't huge, and we're doing it all the way down to our own end line. Like where defend our Stefan's got the ball at his goal line, and he's our defenders are getting all the way back to the end line to give him flat passing options, and then Michael Bradley's a split into the middle. So again, we're definitely playing on the entire field.
Yeah, it was nice to see Nick Lima. Any further thoughts on Lima?
I have no idea what to make of his standing now in the national team. It was a good game and he deserves praise for it. I don't know if he's considered like the guy who can play right back and center mid as like a hybrid, or if Berhalter thinks we have other guys like that, if he thinks Yedlin can do that, if he thinks Sergiño Dest can do, I don't know. We've never asked our right back to do that before, so it'll be interesting to see where Nick Lima stands in March.
Yeah, makes me wonder if we're gonna see a reprise of the Tyler Adams at right back thing in this role.
Don't start that again. But yeah, I mean that had to go. That went through my head too. Like it has to. Like, oh, who could play right back and center mid? Maybe the guy who has played both right back and center mid at a really high level.
Right. Daniel Lovitz on the left side. I don't think he was as impressive as Lima. He was asked to do less, probably.
Asked to do less, and I don't. It doesn't. It seems like a position, if that's what we're gonna, if that's how we're gonna play, that we would give to a more competent center back, one of our more competent center backs, right? And just play like an unbalanced defense with three center backs. So you could have Brooks and Miazga and Aaron Long in at the same time. I don't think Lovitz was a great passer. I didn't think he was an excellent passer. I thought he hit a lot of balls that just got picked off easily. So I don't think he offered much as far as hitting penetrating passes. He didn't have much defending to do. So, what do we know about Lovitz after this?
Yeah, I mean, he did hit that really nice ball to Jahzy Zardes at the six in the first half. I agree with you, this passing was wayward too often, but he did have that really nice cross.
All right.
Zimmerman and Long, I thought they were fine. I didn't see anything wonderful or anything bad from them. Did you?
No, I mean, again, not tested defensively, and Zimmerman gives us what we know he gives us, and I don't mean to underplay that. It's huge to have a threat like he is on set pieces for a team that's not known for generating a lot of offense.
You think Zimmerman's played himself into the top four center backs?
Man, do I have no idea. I don't even know. I don't even know if, for all I know, he was already in the top four center backs according to Berhalter. Like, I know we're probably going to have to do these things, but I don't even feel like I should give my opinion on who the top four center backs are.
Yeah, let's not. Michael Bradley at the six.
Are you going to call him a revelation?
I thought he was for me, he was the man of the match. I thought he was really, really good. Just a great metronome. He was alert defensively. He played some not just metronome type passes, but really he had that one instep pass to Mihailovic down the left wing in the first half. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like a one touch, played Mihailovic into space. I thought Bradley was awesome tonight and totally deserves to be in that role, assuming Berhalter's not going to change it up completely in March.
I think it's what we expected. Like, I expected him to play and I expected him to do really well, and I think he did. You can offer the caveats that he had a ton of time and all those things, but you have to know that we're going to have a lot of time against a lot of the CONCACAF teams. And so you want a guy in there who's going to execute in those conditions, and he sure did. So I don't know. I guess what I'm looking forward to the most is basically watching over the next 24 to 48 hours, or the next week, because he may well start again out against Costa Rica. If people continue to say that he's garbage and has nothing to offer the team.
Yeah, people are going to keep saying that. I'm just excited to see how this would look, with Bradley there and then maybe Tyler Adams and McKennie in front of him. I mean, who knows? And then, like you were talking about earlier, some of the better attackers, Pulisic, Sargent, maybe Weah, maybe Amon, up front in those positions. It seems like it would just almost the job would even get easier for Bradley. If we have fearsome attacking threats on the wings and at striker.
And we're still playing against like low CONCACAF competition, because that's what the Gold Cup is going to be for 4 out of 7 games.
Right. Okay, let's move up through the lineup. Mihailovic.
I've kind of given my bid on Mihailovic. I thought he was good to get into the pockets, to be found. I thought when he was found, he was able to solve things technically, and he made the right decisions. So again, a guy who a month ago was like, maybe we should take a flyer on Mihailovic, and we were naming him as one of five guys to take flyers on. And he showed why you do things like that. He showed why you take a 20-year-old instead of just relying on the names that we've always been calling up, because he did really well. The goal aside, he just played a very good game of soccer.
Yeah. I was one question that was going through my head watching it was, could West McKennie do what he is doing? And I guess could Tyler Adams do what Chris, serve the role that Christian Roldan is serving? I don't know that I have a clear answer to those things. I mean, I no doubt in my mind, Wes McKennie and Tyler Adams have a higher FIFA rating and are better players than Mihailovic and Roldan. But it'll be interesting to see how that lineup is set up in
It'll
March.
be really interesting because we also have a lot less time for Tyler Adams and Wes McKennie to learn the intricacies of the system. So I don't know. I don't know if the system will look as clean or as sharp over 2.5 days of preparation in March.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see it though.
Yeah, me too. What a fascinating challenge for Berhalter. I think another nugget from the Tenorio interview on Total Soccer Show was that his understanding for Berhalter is they're using the January camp not just to train the players, but to figure out the fastest way to teach important concepts. Did you hear this? It's
Right.
kind of a cool
So
idea.
when they know to basically prepare for only having 2 days to prepare.
Right. Yeah. They're like overloading the players with a lot of information one day, seeing how it sort of plays out, how it works.
And you're telling me you don't think that Jurgen Klinsmann was doing this?
Man, do I have no idea. Yeah. You don't think he was?
My God, no.
Probably Bruce Arena wasn't doing this either.
I don't think Bruce Arena was doing it. I don't think Dave Sarakin was doing it.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. Christian Roldan is the other 10.
He seemed like he put in a good shift. Didn't really stick out to me, gotta say.
So he stuck out to me because I'm watching this 3-4-3, and I love it because one of the teams I coach, we run this like 3-4-3 in attack. We don't shift into it. We just run this 3-4-3 all the time. And so my favorite thing is how in between the lines those two tens are, and how it makes defenders have really difficult choices. So I really enjoyed watching Roldan and Georgie getting into those little spaces, these little in between areas that defenders don't know which guy is supposed to account for him. So the number of times Roldan did that, I thought I was really like pleased with. It takes a lot of recognition and timing, and he just did such a good job. He doesn't always. He's not going to like blow the doors off once he gets the ball in those spaces.
Right.
So and I think I even said this about Christian Roldan. If Greg Berhalter can make Christian Roldan look really good, like imagine what he'll do for Weston McKennie. So that's sort of what I was watching. I know we just talked about will McKennie be able to do it. I feel like he will, and so it was great to see how effectively Roldan could sort of impart himself on the game, knowing that we have some bigger hitters coming up.
Waiting in the wings. Okay, and then the front three, Jeremy Abobase. I would say he was out of position and never looked super comfortable on the wing. Kind of the whole Jozy Szardes syndrome, being put on the wing when you're really a striker. And then we've talked about Szardes kind of a lot, so let's just skip him. And then Corey Baird, what were your thoughts on him?
So I think all three of these guys were really average. Like I don't think any of them really offered that much. Baird didn't do anything really on his own to create, I didn't think. I thought he was sort of always already put in position to do so. And then I don't think he made the most. He other than his excellent ball into Georgie for the first goal, I didn't think Baird showed a lot of like solutions. I don't think he offered a lot to take the situation he had and improve it slightly. So didn't think that any of the, and that's, I think we knew going in, none of the attacking players were going to be big influences on the team going forward. So I don't think any of these three, including Baird, who I think probably had the best game out of the three of them, I don't think any of them really did too much.
Yeah,
I
I
mean,
mean you're right about him. Baird hit several crosses off of his defender, and I don't think he beat his guy once. And maybe that's not his game. I think Berhalter in the post-game press conference said he was pleased with Baird's timing on his runs, and there was one instance
fair play then.
one instance where Roldan ended up with the ball. A nice little passing sequence that started on the left side of the field and moved its way to the middle. Roldan was on the ball and he took a shot from about 25 yards. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it definitely should have slipped Baird in.
Yeah, Baird was running with a full head of steam into that space. So one of the reporters at the press conference asked, Berhalter what he was talking about. This apparently there was an extended conversation on the bench. He said that's what they were talking about. That, you know, Christian has the option to shoot there. That's his his prerogative, but probably should have slipped it in to Baird because that's exactly the situation they're trying to engineer.
If Baird was doing more that required a little more timing and nuance than what I could see that Berhalter's talking about, then I'm going to go ahead and trust Berhalter on that. But I mean, these guys are all just seat fillers, I think.
Yeah, I would say that's probably, and I don't want to be harsh, but probably true of everybody in that front five. None of them was a game changer. Mihailovic was sharp and seemed intelligent and quick with his thinking to me, but he didn't come across to me as a potentially game-changing number 10. Did he to you?
Probably not, but I'll say this. I think it was going to be really hard for Roldan or Mihailovic to look like a game-changing 10 with Zardes as the target striker. I think if you put Altidore in there, you put Sargent in there, then suddenly a number 10 has a lot more to do, because without that target who can actually hold the ball up, your number 10s basically become like build-up number 10s for the most part.
Yeah.
Rather than like, all right, now we've done the build-up part and we've hit the striker, we found the window to the striker's feet, and now everyone gets goal dangerous, and the movement and the interchange and the tight little passes and small windows happens. You're not going to get to see any of that.
Right. Okay, well, let's talk quickly about the subs.
I thought Legette looked really good. I thought Sebastian Legette came in and looked really he came in and kind of changed the game a little bit.
What did he do?
He played a different style.
Yeah.
What did he do? He was more of like a get the ball and drive forward. Like, he put people on their heels driving forward.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Mihailovic was more passing the ball. Legette was dribbling the ball.
Yeah, he was getting it and running at people, and there was real, there was some real danger to it.
Only other sub that I really have anything to say about is Lewis. I'm glad to see he got on the field and created a goal-scoring chance. He just pushed the ball past his guy, apparently a tired defender on the right side, pushed it back past him, and then squared it to Ramirez for the third goal.
Yeah, and there's nothing Ariola did that really kind of struck me as, for all I know, he did something. Obviously, Ramirez had a positive impact. I think Ramirez also had some really slick combination with Legette, but it was hard for me to tell who was who.
Yes, that's right. That was the final play of the game, or pretty much the final play of the game, where Legette had a penalty shout, but the ref didn't call a penalty, called a goal kick, and then the game was over. Yeah, nice combo from Ramirez there. Okay, so what's the overall takeaway here, Greg?
The overall takeaway for me is that this is what competence looks like. Like, this is what a competent program should look like. And that's sort of like, it's depressing how big of a step forward that is.
Yeah. Well, what about the people who say, well, it's just a Panama B team. It's January friendly. Let's not celebrate too much.
Even those people saying that that's a huge step forward. Think of where we were after the last five January camps, like where we're like, holy shit, what did I just watch? That's been our January existence since 2012, where even before that, I'm guessing, where you watch a mess of a soccer game. So it's awesome that. It's for me, it's great that we have to actually be cautious about a really good performance and say, let's hold our horses about that really good performance, because it meant we actually had a performance that we could be happy about. It's not like Bosnia brought their A team last January. We were playing a Bosnian C team, and it was horrendous.
Yeah.
So this has to be seen as a step forward. I think the U.S. national team, and there are a lot of angry voices in the soccer community that we all kind of know, and they're always saying, like, we have to stop. We can't keep making excuses, because the U.S. soccer sort of landscape does run on a lot of excuses. And the one we hear trotted out every January is, well, it's our off season and it's not our first choice lineup and all this. And that's why that's why the soccer's always going to be bad. And we're always going to tie Canada 0-0. And what else do you expect? Well, like, retroactively, that's sort of been shown as being bullshit, because this was, I mean, The rust was apparent, but the rust in this game meant that we only won 3-0 instead of 8-0. Greg Berhalter's come in, and like, again, I'm not saying he's some like tactical genius. He's shown what a competent team should look like after 2.5 weeks of training, that there's some evidence of a plan. And when you play a weak opponent in January, like we tend to play, you should roll through them, and we should win 3-0 in a competent showing.
Yeah. And we did that. And we totally did that.
So I'm now optimistic. Like I think sometimes we're guilty of being too cautious about things like this. Like I think you should acknowledge that we haven't had any managers who've done things like this in the past two cycles of World Cup existence. So the fact that we've done this, now can we look forward to the next excuse being kicked out? And that's the one that I'm all waiting for, is it's hard to play on the road in CONCACAF. So the next excuse I want to see us overcome is the hard to play on the road in CONCACAF excuse. And I want to see us, and that's a long ways off, I know, but like
Yeah.
that's what this game has me looking forward to.
Well, another excuse that's going to come up before that is the excuse that you only have a few days with these guys in March. So
That's true.
how can you expect to get them ready? So hopefully we won't need to make that excuse either.
Yeah, let's get rid of that. And no coach now from now on in January, no coach is allowed to use that off-season excuse. Like, oh, how are we supposed to have him play clean soccer?
You
Because
just
again, we
had 3 weeks with them. Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention in 2008 and 2009. Were our January camp performances pretty brutal back then, too, under Bob
Yes.
Bradley?
They were, and the excuses back then was because back then a lot of our players were in MLS, like our best players, even apart from like Dempsey and Michael Bradley. But even our best MLS players, we tended not to call to January camp, and that's why it was called Camp Cupcake, is you gave the best players like the winter off, and you used it to evaluate these fringe guys.
Oh.
And I don't know what the rationale was. Like, well, since you can't have all of your best players, I guess we'll. Like it'd be, I don't know if it's an ego thing where, I don't know. I couldn't tell you, but the fringe players were the guys brought in rather than your best MLS guys.
Okay, so there was an even further excuse in the, back then.
Right.
I'm watching the game still, and Christian Ramirez, several bright moments of combination play. Two plus the goal, the best striker in America. No, I'm kidding.
Well, on the continent right now, he might be. So like maybe that'll get him a run out against Costa Rica, and we'll see a huge difference.
He also played a back heel to no one too, so there's some bad mixed in with the good.
Don't count that as bad. Any back heel attempt counts as good.
I'm sure that's how you think. Anything else? Are we good?
We're very good. This is a very good evening.
Yeah. Next game is Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Central Time against Costa Rica. Before we go, should we talk quickly about Tyler Adams' performance today?
We should always talk about Tyler Adams, even if he hasn't played. We should be talking about Tyler Adams.
Okay. Well, he did play today, so let's talk about that real quick. Did you watch it?
Of course I watched it. So it's he's been in Germany for less than just about 3 weeks, and he started the second game he was eligible to start for Champions League contenders, Red Bull Leipzig.
Yep, on the road at Fortuna Düsseldorf, which is not a great team, but they've been on a good run of form. I think they've won four straight. And yeah,
They rolled them like
3-0 by the 20th minute, basically.
Adams and company made Dusseldorf look like Panama in a January friendly. It was one-way traffic, and it was never in doubt. And Tyler Adams was equal to the part of every other Leipzig player who made Dusseldorf look bad.
He had a little 15-second stretch somewhere in the first 5 minutes where he intercepted a pass with a sliding tackle, jumped right up, and then just zipped a ball forward to the feet of Paulson, I think it was. And then 10 seconds later, a ball squirts away from one of the Dusseldorf players, and he tackles him again. I could just see like Tyler Adams is putting his stamp on this match.
Yeah, I think it was a slide tackle for the first one, and then like borderline two-footed challenge on the second one that left a guy in a heap
Yeah.
for the next 3 minutes.
He was really good, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I was high on Adams' chances to make a pretty instant impact. I know there was some injury consideration right here. Somebody was injured. Who's our guy who might have been playing who's injured?
Comple, Kevin Comple.
So he's out injured, gives Adams the opportunity, potentially. We don't know what would have happened if he were healthy. But I think Adams does so many things that no one else can do that if his soccer stuff is is even close to the guys ahead of him, it makes Adams impossible to keep out of the lineup. And I'm not even saying that he's behind guys on the soccer pieces. He could be at their level or ahead of them, but he only needs to be close. And him starting in this game already, I think, is confirmation that that's the case, that he's definitely not behind on the soccer pieces.
Yeah. He covers, I mean, it's almost a cliche at this point, but he covers so much ground and he anticipates danger so much faster than everybody else. You know, his anticipation combined with his athleticism and level of commitment, he's such a defensive asset.
And I know Dusseldorf's a weak team, but the way Leipzig were just able to swarm them, it was fun to watch the just that part of it, let alone the goal scoring. I was just gonna say they've got Hanover on Friday, so they could very well do the same thing and just overrun a weak Hanover side again on Friday.
Yeah, could be 14-0. Hanover just made a coaching change. And we needed that from Tyler Adams because the rest of the weekend in the Bundesliga wasn't too much to be excited about.
Not what we've grown accustomed to.
No, we need a celebration every week in Germany. Otherwise it's weird. All right, let's go to bed. Thanks
All right,
everybody.
we'll see everyone next time.